Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something seeks to celebrate the craft of live storytelling. The Missoula community comes together for a night of shared stories told live, focused on a theme. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on October 10th, 2013 at the Top Hat. This edition of Tell Us Something features 8 storytellers telling a story based upon the theme, Be Careful What You Wish For. This week's story comes to us from Doug Dottie and is titled Pain, Emptiness, and Breathing. Thank you for listening.
I'm standing in my living room, and I'm heartbroken. 2 months before, I'd gone to pick up my girlfriend who I was living with at the airport. And when I picked her up, I said, you know how we talked a while back about buying a house together and moving in? We're living together now. We're going to move into another house. I found a great house while you were out in Seattle. And she said, I got to tell you, I wasn't just visiting a friend. I was interviewing for jobs, and I'm moving to Seattle without you. So 2 months later, on a cold spring Sunday afternoon, I'm standing in my living room, and I'm heartbroken because here are the boxes of my life that I'm getting ready to move into the new house, and there are the empty spaces where her things were, and she's gone, and she's not coming back, and the life that I had imagined is not going to happen. And I'm so filled with pain and sorrow and regret for not having been the kind of man that she wanted to stay with. I hear this banging on my door and a little kid shouting. I open up my door, and it's the next door neighbor's daughter, Azure. Azure's about 10 years old, and she's going, Doug, come, you got to come help me. There's something wrong with Kelsey. You got to come help me, come on. There's something wrong with Kelsey, come on. And I can't figure out who Kelsey is, and I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm thinking, oh, no. They just got some young cats, and I have a cat-killing dog. And all I can think is that one of their cats got into my yard, my dog attacked it, and now I got to deal with a 10-year-old and a severely injured or dying cat. So Azure's pulling me towards the gate, and I look over, and my dog is sound asleep in the flower bed. So I'm trying to figure out who Kelsey is. Azure, we go through the front gate, and Azure's mom comes running at me, and she's holding the baby in her arms. And I'm thinking, oh, Kelsey's probably like the baby. She's 10 months old now or something. I hadn't seen him over the winter. I kind of forgotten about it. And her mom, Holly, is saying, Doug, help me. You got to do something. You got to help me. She's not breathing. Help me. And as Holly runs up to me, I instinctively put out my hands to her. And into my hands, she put a dead baby. I've been a Buddhist since I was 19 years old. And one of the central tenets of Buddhism is that you try to empty yourself. You need to get away from yourself and your ego and your pain. And that's why Buddhists meditate. That's why there's such a thing as being in the moment when you're fly fishing or sewing or cooking or riding bike. When you're in that moment, you're an empty vessel, and then things can come into you. And when I felt the weight of that baby in my arms, I was empty like that. No more pain, no more thinking about myself. And in that emptiness, 2 things became true. The first thing is, I don't panic. I've led a real interesting life, like in the way of the Chinese curse of may you lead an interesting life. I was a real wild person in my teens and my 20s. Fast cars, whiskey bottles, lots of partying, lots of non-prescription personal additives. I've been partying with bikers at 3 a.m., on a Tuesday morning, wearing the same suit and tie I wore to work the day before. I grew up in an oil field boom town, and it was fisticuffs everywhere you could turn, and you had to learn to hold your own, and you don't back down from a fight, and you don't have fear, and you react, and you do something. I used to work in a job where my job for 4 or 5 years was to go in, and I worked with people that had cognitive disabilities and sometimes mental illness, and they would become aggressive against me or against other people, or in the most heartbreaking way, they would try and harm themselves. And my job was to restrain them, sometimes for an hour at a time, or to put them in straitjackets to keep them from hurting themselves. And I did that thousands of times over several years, and I have burnt my adrenaline gland out through that. I've been chased by moose. I used to be a whitewater rafting guide. I've gone underneath Class 4 rapids. I've flipped. I've done river rescues on pretty much every river from Yankee Jim Canyon to the Salmon. I've been to the edge, and I've lived on the edge, and I've done a lot of things. And one benefit that's given me is that when things go wrong, I don't panic. I react. The second thing that became true is that if you train well, you react well. And a couple of years before this, I was bored in the winter. There's nothing on TV. I needed to do something. I went and got certified as an emergency medical technician. So as I'm holding this baby, I do something. I turn to Azure and I say, this is before cell phones. I tell Azure, I want you to run in the house and call 911. When they answer, tell them your sister's not breathing. Tell them your address. When they say the address back to you, I want you to come right back out here. Because if I need help, it's going to have to come from Azure. Because Holly, the mom, of course, is completely hysterical. Her baby's not breathing. And I turn to Holly and I say, Holly, can you tell me what happened? And Holly says, I was at the sink, and I was doing dishes, and the baby was eating graham crackers in her high chair, and I'm doing the dishes, and I turned back around, and the baby slumped over, and I picked her up, and she's not breathing, and I can't get her to wake up, and you got to do something. Help me! And I had a theory. I thought, I bet I know what happened. The baby's eating graham crackers. And when baby's eating, they're just jamming their mouth full, get a big old wad of graham crackers in there that's half wet and half dry. The baby goes to swallow. That wad gets stuck in her throat. Babies being babies don't have a lot of experience with this kind of thing. So sometimes what will happen is the baby gets the wad stuck. They can't breathe. They don't know how to cough. They don't know how to take a drink of water. They can't self-Heimlich. They don't know how to go and let somebody know that something's going on. And Holly had her back turned anyway for just a moment. So when that happens to babies, when they get something caught in their trachea sometimes like that, they're like, I can't breathe. I don't know what to do. And they're out. They're unconscious. Holly tells me that, and I thought, all right, I got a theory. I know what to do. Plan A. I take my finger, and I sweep it through the baby's mouth, trying to see if I can dislodge the ball. Nothing. Put my finger in again, and this time I put it down the baby's throat, trying to get her to cough or to throw up. Nothing. The baby is completely non-responsive, unconscious. Plan B, I get down on one knee, and I put the baby on my knee, face up, and I'm cradling her head. And what I'm going to do is the Heimlich maneuver on a baby. I'm going to do three quick thrusts on her diaphragm, try and force air up, and dislodge that out of her throat. One, two, three. Nothing. Baby's totally not responding. One, two, three. Still nothing. This baby is completely limp. One more time on plan B. One, two, three. I listen. I feel. There's no air coming out of the baby. Now it's time for plan C. I got plan C, and then I have plan D. Plan D is that I'm going to be doing CPR on a baby on top of one of those big green garbage cans on a Sunday afternoon, and it's not going to work. Infant CPR is a hard thing to do. And doing infant CPR on a baby with a blocked airway, it's not going to work. I'm going to be doing CPR on a dead baby on Sunday afternoon with her mom on one side and her sister on the other. I don't want to do plan D. Go to plan C. I'm going to try the same type of Heimlich maneuver, flip the baby over on my knee. This time, I'm going to push on her lower back because sometimes babies breathe through their stomach, so there may be air in her stomach, or I might be able to force fluids up out of her stomach to make her cough, make her gag, to get that thing wet so it'll pop out. One, two, three. I listen, feel, nothing. One, two, three. Still nothing. I got one more time before plan D. One, two, three. And this time I hear a little, pah! And the baby is breathing. And she takes another breath, and I pop her up on my knee, and I run through a couple of EMT things because I don't know how long she's been without oxygen, and now I'm worried about brain damage. And I run a couple of quick checks. She doesn't appear to have brain damage, and I can hear the ambulance coming, and I hand over to her mom and her sister, and they're laughing, and they're crying. They're so happy. I talk with the EMTs. The EMTs check the baby out. They say, she looks good. You should take her to the hospital, find out. Have a doctor look at her. So Holly is in no shape to drive. I tell her, call your husband. He can meet us at the hospital. We go up to the hospital. We meet with the doctor. I tell the doctor what I did. The doctor checks the baby out. Baby's fine. They're all one, they are the happiest family ever because they have their baby, they have their sister, they have their daughter, and they are just smiling and laughing in that room where we're with the doctor. And I'm thinking, my work here is, they're the family and I'm not. So I kind of slide out and I go home and I get about three steps into my house and it all comes back. There are the boxes of my things. There are the spaces where Megan's things were. And she's gone, and she's not coming back. And I am so filled with sorrow and regret and pain. And I don't know if I could stand it. And I'm standing in my living room, and I'm heartbroken. And as I'm standing there, I remember one very important thing. The baby is breathing. Thank you.
Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. Thanks to the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years, the Top Hat now serves food and offers, in addition to great music, comedy shows, film, and performance art. TopHatLounge.com. Jonathan Marquis is an artist and human in Missoula, Montana. Learn more about him and his art at SubjectToGravity.com. That's Subject, the number 2, Gravity.com. Matt LaRubio, screen printing and graphic design. More at RanchHandDesign.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people, rockandrudys.com. And thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and to the storytellers this quarter, Doug Doughty, Cheyenne Rivers, Pat Williams, Joe Durbrock, Mark Gibbons, Emily Walter, John Turk, and Cheyenne Ara Rogers. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. The next Tell Us Something is scheduled for December 3rd at the Top Hat, and the theme is Promises.